Coming up on 4 minutes away from 9 o'clock, top of the hour, ABC, Ray Larson will join us, of course. And, Ray, I have about 15 pages of fan mail for you to go through. I'm serious. I showed Scott this earlier, and he says, you're kidding. I said, no, this guy's taken over, and I'm sick of it. We've got a very interesting case this morning. Right. Tell us real quick.
This is a murder case that occurred in Newport in Campbell County, and Michelle Snodgrass is going to be was the prosecutor, and this is the caffeine defense. The guy said that he sleep deprivation, and so it's the caffeine version of the Twinkie defense.
Stand by. Well, that's coming up right now. Time for Earl Pitts, American. Good morning. Our time right now is 9 minutes after 9 o'clock as we welcome you into the 9 to 10 show for Friday, December the 6th, and we're glad you're here today. Commonwealth Attorney Ray Larson is also with us. Good morning, Ray.
Good morning, Jack.
And we talked a little bit about this toward the end of last hour, but for those who are just Ray Larson fans who don't care a whole lot about what I do and have joined us since then, tell us a little bit about what we're going to talk about today.
Well, we're going to talk about a case, a murder case that occurred in Campbell County, at Newport, just across the river from Cincinnati, and our guest is Michelle Snodgrass, who is the Commonwealth Attorney for Campbell County.
Good morning, Michelle.
Hi, how are you guys doing?
Good.
Michelle, I was trying to count in my mind about the number of female Commonwealth attorneys. When I first started, there weren't any female Commonwealth attorneys.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Wow.
And now, let's see, there's you and Linda Tally Smith, Karen
Blondell,
the lady in Estill County.
Right. Yeah, we're growing. We certainly have found our place, and I think as prosecutors, you know, it doesn't really matter what gender you are, as long as you're passionate about what it is that you're doing. And I think that's the one common thread that we all have, whether you're male or female.
Well, in our office, we have 18 prosecutors and 13 are women.
Yes.
And I'm really proud of the work that they do.
Well, that's because you're a smart man, Ray, and that's why. You know that if you need to get the work done, sometimes there are certain genders that are better at multitasking, and I think that's something you need to do as a prosecutor.
Well, I think I'm sorry I mentioned this, Jack.
I saw a woman driving this morning putting on her makeup, so yeah, they can multitask.
Absolutely.
Well, tell us a little bit. First of all, tell us about your jurisdiction up in Campbell County.
Well, Campbell County, we are considered one of the river counties. We are right on the border, right across from downtown Cincinnati. A lot of people are familiar with Newport on the Levee that has the aquarium, a couple of other restaurants and entertainment venues. But my county, besides the river towns, also goes south and has some real rural areas. So we are very much a mix here in Campbell County, and I have about 13 different police jurisdictions that I deal with, and it's a great community. I've lived here my whole life.
One of the...
not yet.
Huh?
Not yet.
Not yet,
yeah,
no, but I plan to be here for
good,
my whole life.
Good, good.
My wife was a fourth grade teacher for many, many years, and one of the things she did was teach Kentucky history.
Yes.
And I learned more about Kentucky counties than... Probably
wanted to know,
that's,
right?
That's right. But Campbell County, I think, is one of two counties that has two county seats.
Yes, we do.
Really?
One, the original county seat is in Alexandria, but they have adopted Newport, the city that we are in, as being our second county seat, and that's where our Justice Center is, and most of the county administration buildings are here in Newport.
So this is an educational show, Jack.
Yep.
People ought to be able to get a little bit of a class credit for that.
Absolutely.
Woody Will Smith.
Yes.
Introduce us to Woody Will Smith.
Well, Woody Smith is an individual who lived in Dayton, Kentucky. Dayton is another one of our river towns. And on May 4th, 2009, Woody Smith decided that he had had enough of his wife, Amanda, a young girl. I think she was 28 years old at the time. And he grabbed a cord and he strangled her to death. At the time that, this case was getting ready to go to trial, it's actually a really interesting case. A lot of the media dubbed this the caffeine defense case, which wasn't really accurate. It's more of a case of sleep deprivation. And, you know, Ray, these days defendants are finding any reason, any excuse that they can to not be held responsible for their actions, and that's what Woody Smith tried to do in court.
We did, and I was reading about this case, the caffeine defense.
Yes.
All of a sudden, I thought, boy, that's an offshoot of the Twinkie defense. And you're absolutely right. We're running into all sorts of issues that people are
trying to avoid taking responsibility.
Yeah. That kind of thing. Okay, so tell us a little bit about Woody himself and his family and his wife, and how did this come to pass?
Well, Woody and Amanda had been married for about 4 years, but they had been in a relationship for much longer than that, probably at least 8 to 10 years. They had two children. They had a son who had Down syndrome, and they had a daughter that was in preschool. Amanda was pretty much an orphan. Both of her parents had died when she was very young. She had been raised by an aunt with and lived with a couple of cousins, but in reality, she didn't really have family. So she got really close to Woody's family. His parents essentially became her surrogate parents, even before they were married. She was extremely close to his mother. She worked at the Super Value grocery store, worked a lot of very long hours, but anytime she wasn't working, her life was dedicated to her two young kids. And Woody, too. He was somewhat involved with the children, not as much as his wife, and he was a distributor, like a rep for Pepsi. So he would go to the grocery stores and stock the shelves with the Pepsi product. However, in his spare time, he spent a lot of time on the computer playing video games as opposed to spending the time with his family like Amanda did.
So what happened that caused him to feel like he was compelled to kill his wife?
Well, Amanda had met a young fellow at the store that she was working at, and they got to be friends, and she was extremely unhappy in her relationship with Woody, but she felt trapped. She had this one child that had special needs and just didn't think she could do it on her own. She didn't think she could take care of these kids by herself if she were to leave Woody. This young man, he befriended her. They got close. At some point in time, there was a relationship there. I don't know if I necessarily want to call it a long-term affair, but on one or two occasions, they had been intimate. Woody found out about it. They discussed it. They worked through it. This was probably about 2 months before her murder. So he had known about this situation, but then he started becoming very suspicious. If her phone would get text messages, he would automatically assume it was this young man. She had really cut off the relationship with him, but Woody didn't believe it. So on the morning of May 4th, 2009, something happened in their home that really caused Woody to snap. He said that there was a fight between the two of them, and he grabbed a cord and choked her to death. Those were his words.
What was the fight over? Did you know?
Well, earlier in the day, they took their daughter and their son to school. They went to the tanning bed where Amanda went tanning, and Woody stayed outside of the tanning bedroom, which was a little bit unusual. He was pacing back and forth, and according to the woman who owned the salon, he just seemed very agitated. She was getting some texts on her phone, and she had put a passcode on it so that he couldn't read those text messages, and he was getting very upset about that. According to Woody, they went back to the house, and they started having a fight. And at that point in time, then suddenly Amanda switched and decided that she wanted to be intimate with Woody. He said that when they were done, she had threatened to tell the police that he had raped her and that she was going to take the kids and leave. None of that story really made sense when we looked at the crime scene.
All right, this is a good spot to take a break here. And we will continue this very fascinating story when we come back. 253-5959, touch star 590 from AT&T, toll free from anywhere. 1-877-777-0590 or email jackpatty@wvlkam.com. 19 with Commonwealth Attorney Ray Larson and Michelle Snodgrass from Campbell County is with us. One of these kind of amazing defenses. And you said, Michelle, even though the press dubbed it the caffeine defense, it really wasn't. But why do you think they picked up on that? How did that come to be?
Well, I think originally that's how it started. When it was first presented to us, that they were going off of an overload of caffeine, that Woody Smith had consumed so much caffeine, it essentially sent him into a psychosis. However, I was able to get an expert witness, and we determined that there were a number of things that they weren't going to be able to prove. And I think when the defense realized that, they kind of shifted their focus, not so much into the consumption of caffeine, but into the lack of sleep. So it became a sleep deprivation defense, so that they argued that Woody was so deprived of sleep that he, again, went into a psychosis and shouldn't be held responsible for strangling his wife.
Now, hang on a minute. We're already getting to the end, and we got a few more minutes. We got to get there.
Yes.
Nice try, though. So how was Amanda found, and how was her death reported? How's that happen?
Okay, well, at about 9 o'clock in the morning on May the 4th, Woody and Amanda had gotten into a fight. Woody says he grabbed a cord. This was a cord that's sort of like one of those that attaches a mouse to the keyboard of a computer. And he strangled her. After he strangled her, he took the cord off of her neck and bound her hands and her feet. Now, at this point in time, Amanda was fully clothed, which is why I said earlier that his story didn't match up with the crime scene. She had on her running shoes, socks, jeans, a top. She was not dressed as if she had just had intimate relations with her husband. So he binds her hands. He binds her feet. Even though she was dead, he said, "I wasn't quite sure what would happen, so I tied her up." And then he covered her with the comforter and other blankets on their bed in their master bedroom. What happens next is probably the most disturbing to me. Woody left and picked up his daughter from preschool and brought her home. He fed her noodles for lunch, they watched cartoons, and they played games for a couple of hours, all while Mom is upstairs lying dead in her bed. A few hours later, Woody left to go pick up his son from school. This was about 3 o'clock in the afternoon, so she had been dead for most of the day. And when he picked up his son, he decided to go to his parents' house, and that's when he told them what happened. He brought a video for his children to keep them occupied so that he could talk to his mother alone, and he told his mother that he had hurt Amanda. And that's how it was then reported to the police.
Okay, so the police show up and they find Amanda in that in the condition that you've described, bound and covered up.
Yes.
So what do the police do? What do they think? What's happening now?
Well, at this point in time, they noticed, obviously, the ligature marks were so clear and obvious. It was we knew what the cause of death was, but she was also very bruised. She had bruising all over her body. She clearly fought for her life up until the last minutes. At the same time, though, Woody's at his parents' house, and he takes some kind of a pill to calm his nerves. And when the police realize this, they're a little concerned about him and the way he was acting, so they took him to the hospital. While he was at the hospital, he was fine. There was nothing real severe going on. Woody gave a statement to the police and essentially told them his version of what had happened. And his version was that Amanda was pushing his buttons, and he just grabbed a cord and choked her to death. He just kept using those words. And then he said he sat and he thought and thought and thought, and after he did that, he realized it was time to get his daughter. He was very matter-of-fact in what had happened.
This, you know, the solving this case is the easy part.
Yes.
The hard part comes in when all of a sudden this guy has a lawyer, and the lawyer was Shannon Sexton.
Yes.
And Shannon Sexton, I know Shannon Sexton. He did an internship at our office.
Well, he worked with me.
Yeah.
He was a prosecutor in my office.
Mm-hmm. And is a bright guy and a good lawyer.
Absolutely.
So. When he, all of a sudden, the Woody gets is now represented by Shannon Sexton, and how does the defense begin to develop? What was the defense?
Well, Woody says he doesn't remember anything from that day. This was his story in court. He didn't remember speaking to them. He didn't remember. Speaking to people at the hospital, he couldn't remember any of it. So when the defense started looking through the last couple of weeks of Woody's life, what he told them is that he was staying up late at night because he was worried that his wife was going to leave with the children. So he wasn't sleeping, and he was drinking a lot of these energy drinks.
The Red Bull kind of things. Those, absolutely, yes.
Yeah. You remember I said he worked for Pepsi,
yeah.
So he had access to their product.
Okay, we're going to take a break. We'll be right back. 253-5959, touch star 590 from AT&T, toll free from anywhere, 1-877-777-0590, email jackpatty@wvlkam.com.
WVLK.
We're back with Commonwealth Attorney Ray Larson, Commonwealth Attorney from Campbell County, and her name is Michelle Snodgrass, and she's been with us before. And Michelle, I was telling Ray, you're a really good guest.
Well, thank you. You know, before I went to law school, I was a reporter. So
really, where did you?
I like when I can mix my two backgrounds.
Where did
together.
You do that? Where did you report?
Up here in Northern Kentucky. I went to Western Kentucky and got my degree in journalism. And
well, that's great.
Yeah, used to do a little local news up here. So
great. Well, you do. You're a very good guest.
Oh, thank you.
Well, don't pay too much attention to that now, Michelle.
I won't. Okay. I know I got to work hard for you, Ray.
Okay. So tell me about how did the defense come about, and how do you start rebutting a defense that's made? Because when you get ready to go to trial, there's a lot of pretrial things that happen. And you get the idea what the defense is going to be. And how do you go about dealing with those kind of things?
Well, in this particular case, we received a report from their expert witness. You know how sometimes we look at these. They're hired guns that'll say whatever, you know, they want whatever the client wants them to say. So in this particular case, there was a report from an expert.
Is that Nolker?
Yes, it is. Yes.
You know, let me interrupt you here for a second. You know, Jack Nolker, this guy, testified in the LaFonda Faye Foster case in 1986 for her.
Wow. Yeah.
Then one of the great questions you ask is how much you're being paid.
Right.
And have you ever testified for a prosecution?
Absolutely.
And guess what? Nope.
Right.
And paid a lot. Yeah. Okay.
Right. And so what Dr. Nolker said in this case was that Woody had to have been in a psychosis because he was suffering from delusions. None of it made sense to me. So, of course, what we do as prosecutors is we try to find somebody to present what we believe is the correct version. I was fortunate enough to find an individual at the University of Cincinnati. His name is Dr. Mossman, Stuart Mossman, who is not only the head of their psychiatry department, he's also an instructor at the law school. So he knows how to combine mental health issues and how they pertain to the law. And, you know, in our case, he's not really a hired gun. Any money that he would get goes to the school and goes to the University of Cincinnati. One of the things that Dr. Nolker said it was about these delusions. So here's what Woody was thinking. Up in the couple of weeks prior to Amanda's death, things were happening to him. His car broke down. He wondered, did Amanda do something to my car? His gas grill blew up, had a little problem. He thinks Amanda set it up. He thought his children were being drugged so that they could go to sleep, so that Amanda could meet with her boyfriend. Dr. Nolker called those delusions. Unfortunately for him, he left out part of the definition of what a delusion is. A delusion is a false belief that has no evidence to the contrary. But in this case, there was evidence. And what Dr. Mossman was able to explain to the jury is Woody's car really did break down. So that wasn't a delusion. It happened. It's fact. His gas grill did blow up. It's fact. There was a bottle of NyQuil laying out in the children's bedroom. Those were all facts. Now, he wondered what was happening and what led up to those things happening, but wondering isn't a delusion. When Mr. Smith, Woody Smith, met with my expert, Dr. Mossman, he said he did consider some other possibilities, but he just didn't know what was true. So we were able to start attacking these issues in this defense of the sleep deprivation bit by bit. And that was a big hurdle to overcome, was these delusions, to prove that he really wasn't in a psychosis. He just was questioning what was going on in his life, which many people do.
I got a question. As a prosecutor, and you have one of these weird defenses like that, is there a way you can research and see if there have been other cases that this was used as a defense?
Obviously, we do that, and I reached out to prosecutors all over. What was interesting, though, the effect that this had, I think there was a newspaper article, maybe the Associated Press picked it up, when they first said that this was going to be their defense. I received emails and letters from psychologists across the country basically saying, this is the craziest thing we have ever heard. We will do whatever we can to help you because we don't want people using a possible, you know, trumped up mental defense to be able to get out of a murder.
So in this case, because I know a lot of times the press can be a hindrance, but in this case, the press was actually helpful.
They really were. And in fact, I remember one letter that I received from, it was actually a sleep clinic in New York. And they said that it's crazy whether he's going to claim caffeine or sleep deprivation. They had done all these studies of individuals who were in situations where they were truly sleep deprived, whether it be soldiers that are in combat and they are not able to sleep, whether it be doctors that are working these crazy shifts and studying for their boards. There are all kinds of situations where people can be truly sleep deprived, and yet they have found that it does never go into this type of a psychosis.
All right, let's go to the phones. Jim is on the line. Good morning, Jim.
Yeah, you know, when these people play this get-out-of-jail-free card, what's the difference between the energy drinks or somebody drinking and driving? You know, it's all the same stuff. You did something that made you do something or...
So yeah, it's just trying to take the blame off you and blame something else for
exactly.
it.
Exactly. I mean, why is that allowed in court?
Well,
Ray, you want to handle that one?
we wonder most of the time why it's allowed, but it's it is it's they make a defense and they try to make it a legitimate defense, and the jury has to use common sense to deal with it, and most of the time juries do deal with it.
They really do, and I think in Campbell County we have some really smart juries, and what we were able to find is that really the caffeine in these energy drinks lots of times is less than what's in your Starbucks coffee.
Oh, I bet. We're going to take a break. We'll be right back. Our final break. And Michelle Snodgrass is with us. She is the Commonwealth Attorney up in Campbell County. Commonwealth Attorney Ray Larson. And we got about 6 minutes to wrap this case up, Ray.
Michelle, how long did the trial last?
The trial lasted about a week. And, you know, as I said, in Campbell County, and I'm sure you say the same thing in your jurisdiction, we have pretty smart jurors. They take their obligation very seriously, and really this came down to a case of expert versus expert, and you know, one was really trying to go off of the facts and the other one was just trying to float this theory that was supported by nothing, and I think our jury saw that. So after they had heard a lot from Dr. Mossman, and he was able to describe Woody and how he really was on that day as a responsible parent, somebody who was able to pick up his children, get them fed, take them to a safe place, to his mother's, they were able to see that basically he knew exactly what he was doing on that day in May, and everything that he did was intentional, and that his act of killing his wife was intentional. So the jury had a couple of different options. They could find him not guilty based upon the psychosis. They could find him guilty of any other number of charges, but what they came back with was a guilty verdict to murder. And I think that it was the only option for this jury.
Well, when a jury gets, the judge has to instruct the jury or read to the jury what the law is, and they're called instructions. And he was charged with murder, I guess intentional murder.
Yes.
And did the judge instruct them on the lesser included homicide charges?
They did. Because of the issue with the affair, because there was some testimony that there was this relationship, one of the jury's options was manslaughter first degree, which is killing of an individual after you have some type of a triggering event, an emotional disturbance, something that happens that kind of in that last minute makes you not be able to act appropriately. The way that we rebutted that was to say that Woody knew about this affair for well over a month. They had been dealing with this issue, so it wasn't something new that had happened that he discovered and in the heat of the moment did this horrible act. He knew what was going on, and in reality, we knew what happened that day. We knew that Amanda told him, finally, I'm done. I'm done, and I'm leaving, and I'm going to take the kids. And he was not going to let that happen.
I got an email here. Ray gets a lot of fan mail. Oh, you need to know that, Michelle. Says, I know Ray was using his wry wit sarcastically when he said he didn't know why the court allows these defenses. For the rest of the audience, it falls under the Fifth Amendment right to due process. Love your crime show. Fifi. That's from Fifi.
Okay.
Yeah. And they do have the right to present them. You know, that's why we're just glad that we have juries that are smart and they can see beyond that.
Well, that's right. And it's we just have to, as prosecutors and the police, we have to prepare for whatever defense. Fortunately, there are very few surprises in a criminal trial anymore.
You know what that I don't understand? Maybe you could explain it to we folk who aren't attorneys, but you have to show your hand in terms of what you have to the defense, but they don't have to do that for you, right?
Well, to a limited extent, that's right. We have to... we have to turn over what they call discovery, which is basically an investigative file. There are rules, there are criminal rules that require that. The other side has to produce expert reports and that sort of thing.
Got 1 minute.
So it's there are not many surprises, Jack. Do you agree with that, Michelle?
I do, and you know, as far as these mental health defenses, that is the one thing that we're entitled to know in advance. And there's no other way that we could proceed to trial unless we were notified of that, because as the Commonwealth, as a party to the case, we do have the right to present our side.
So what happened?
To get our own expert.
We got 30 seconds. What happened? Where is he?
Woody Smith got a sentence of life in prison, and I thought that was the only fair sentence. He took Amanda's life. She was 28 years old, and she was a wonderful mother, and she was going to miss out on everything, and I thought that he should spend his life in prison as well. But he'll be eligible for parole.
Okay. Well, thank you so much for being with us.
Thanks, Michelle. You're the best.
Thank you, Ray. We'll see you next week.